Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
iZotope, Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, iZotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit iZotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. Listen up, dear listeners in the UK. There's a brand new guitar show this year, the Brighton Guitar Show. It's a one-day show happening on the 15th of July at the Brighton Racecourse, and it's going to be great. We'll be there along with loads of your favourite boutique and major brands like Two Notes Audio Engineering, Chapman Guitars, Fidelity Guitars, Thought BFX, Pedal Patch, Bright Onion Pedals, Ranger FX, NRG FX, Great Eastern FX, Iverson Guitars, Kurt Mangan Strings, Mabry, Leighton, Lemon Audio, Xander Circuitry, and loads more. What more excuse do you need to come to sunny Brighton, the birthplace of guitar nerds, than a guitar show full of guitars, pedals, effects, and accessories? Come say hi, hang out, have a beer, and check out all the cool gear with Matt, JD, and I. You might even see a few of the OG guitar nerds hosts knocking about. For tickets, visit brightonguitarshow.co.uk or check them out on social media with Brighton Guitar Show. See you there.
JD, I found a wooden shoe in my toilet. It was clogged.
I tell you what, JD, I love dad jokes, but I don't have kids, which makes me a faux pas. I think I have a drum roll.
They're going to be like, actually, I think I have a kid.
Hello, dear listener. Hello, and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hi, all.
Hello. Hello. Welcome back, JD. It's been a few weeks since we've had you on an episode. I assume that means we're going to have loads of new gear to talk about, which is normally the gist.
Probably. I have also been on, you know, a semi-self-imposed gear purchasing hiatus, which, of course, I've not done well.
I saw you post about this on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group that you were trying to abstain from gear for a little while. You had a really, I think it was that guitar show, that Birmingham guitar show that really did you in. It's so difficult, isn't it? I do exactly that. Like, you walk around a show, maybe you speak to a builder or a little brand that you didn't know about, and you get excited about the product. The next thing you know, you've bought their back catalog, and I think that happened to you maybe five times at the show.
Well, I mean, it just sort of all happened at once, and it's the thing is, like, you know, when you get on a roll, you either keep going or you take a pause. And I was like, maybe I could take a pause because, you know, because also the Brighton Guitar Show is coming up. So that's, you know, to be fair, that's really why I want to just cool my jets for a hot moment.
That is a good idea. I'm excited about that. Sometime in July. The date is never quite going to my head when it is, but I have it written down somewhere.
Fifteenth.
So do come down, dear listener. Me and JD are both going to be there, and Matt. We're going to be doing some Q&A stuff with Thorpe FX and some others as well. Maybe do some stuff. Highwater are going to be there. They're bringing a load of their cool new amps, so that will be exciting.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see those. Also, yeah, like there's some more Thorpe stuff that I wouldn't be surprised if I walk away with some Thorpe stuff from that show. So
what sort of thing? Is there anything you're pining after?
Really, the chorus, I think I really want to...
What is that called? The deep organ?
Yeah. I really want to try that. Been looking for a new chorus effect. There's a Dimmadash one coming out soon, but I don't know if I have the patience to wait for it, and can never really have too many good choruses, really. So, that's sort of my kind of main one that I'm looking for, and then there's always going to be other stuff like... of theirs. I mean, all their stuff's great, so it's
so good.
Tough. Yeah,
the deep organ, is it one of the... So the deep organ is the Dan Coggins, another Love Tone Dan Coggins collaboration, just like we talked about the Fat General. Matt and I, JD, talked about the Fat General last week, so I've recently rediscovered that it might be the best compressor I own, and yet it sat in a box. It sounds just like a CS2 but with more clarity. And it also runs on 9 volts, which is nice. But the deep organ, this looks good, like a three-dimensional chorus. I haven't really checked it out. So what do you get? You get depth, rate, you get treble, which is nice, plus volume, and a blend. Ooh, and wet and dry outputs.
Yeah, that is good. It is basically everything I want in a chorus pedal. And also I love Thorpe stuff. They always look cool on the board, if nothing else, you know, and they are the best pedals that I think I've seen in ages. Like they're just, you know, it's all, you know, mil spec everything. So it's great. But.
That's it, isn't it? That's what Adrian sort of went after, I think, with Thorpe FX. He was just like, how do I make these things the best possible build quality? And then he also put so much time and effort into the creation of them and working with Dan Coggins. So you're bringing back all these amazing pedals that, you know, or reinterpreting amazing pedals that we didn't necessarily get before.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, I mean, plus, I mean, there's going to be so much stuff, but like for Thorpe, that's sort of my prize, sort of. Maybe I'll just pick one of these up because, you know, like, I mean, they're always, you know, sort of around on like Reverb or eBay and stuff as well. But it's like, I'd rather just, you know, get one at the show from Thorpe.
They're expensive. They're like 250-60 quid, something like that, aren't they, for a deep organ, which is a fair old shot. Was it 26499 on the website, which is a big chunk of money, but obviously, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
what you are getting is quality.
Yeah, and I always find like chorus, I mean, for me, chorus is sort of my, besides octave, is my main effect besides drives as well. Right. You know, it's like, it's sort of the thing that I find it really pays to invest in a good chorus.
Right.
And certainly for like what I want is like, you know, I want like big analog chorus sounds, but I also want control because it's bass. And, you know, like, so it's, you know, there's bits of like, you know, there's only so many like Roland Prophet style or, you know, like the, or like, or, you know, like a Juno style chorus sound, you know, here in my head that it's like, oh, I want that. But then it's like, but that's not usable except in a few situations, really. Yeah. And I like to have the option of both, but yeah.
It's always that I find so many choruses create this weird mid hump. Which isn't not very usable for either guitar or bass. I mean, unless with guitar, if you specifically want that, then that's great. That can be what chorus is really good at. But certainly for bass, it makes you sit oddly in the mix. Definitely if you're mixing between a clean signal and that. If you build your sound around a chorus being on all the time, you can cater for it. But if you're turning it on and off, it does odd things to where you sit in the mix, which is so often the problem. It's what I love the sound of the Dimension Chorus when I plug it in my office or on my own, and then I try and use it in a band. I'm like, only having buttons is a little bit of a problem because I really want to tweak this.
That's the thing with like that. I find this like, you can have a chorus that sounds great on your own, as you're saying, but it's like for bass, especially like without. I find that it just becomes a bunch of mud, really. Right. Like it's just this like non-defined space that sort of feels like it weighs everything down in the way that like bad reverb can do as well. Where you know, like you listen to some albums or some bands live, and you're saying, I can't make out anything. Whereas it's like it's the reverb isn't there like enhancing it. And again, like if that's how you're planning or that's a stylistic choice, whatever. But it's like when it's on and off. And everything that you just sort of, I only want it to sound bigger. So what I used to use the chorus for, and I've probably talked about this before, but I used to run a stereo rig in the old days when this was ridiculous. So like 2 8-10s. I knew I had one stage left, one stage right. And when I put the chorus on, it just made everything seem so much bigger because it was chorusing between, because I had stereo outs and it was chorusing between, across the whole stage and everything as well. And that was the big point of it. But like, I'm not really doing that at the moment. So it's just like, I want to create movement and I want something a bit different to sort of make parts stand out or to blend in a bit. But yeah, I just don't. Anyway, it's important to buy a good chorus.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just changed the chorus on my board. I've changed it to the JHS. I don't know what is this called.
The Emperor.
The Emperor. That's it. I was about to say the King Penguin. No, it's the Emperor. The V2 Emperor is what I changed it to, which is great and exactly the same. Like if you want to use chorus as a boost, one thing that this has, which not a lot of a lot of choruses that I come across have. It's a volume control with some dB really of boost, good. Which is really nice. I can this is almost my first stage of drive now, the chorus pedal. And having a master EQ is always very handy. Yeah. And then it just has speed and depth, which are what you expect.
I think that Emperor's a fantastic chorus as well. Like, I mean, really anything with like a real Bucket Brigade like style chorus, so the analog bit, you know, like it sound, there's so much more something special about it, I find, than like a lot of the like digitally choruses, which there are a lot of really great ones, but they're just different, you know, and like it's not really that I feel like I always miss it when it's not like a analog chorus that way. So
yeah I completely agree. They are wicked. Now I want to talk about one of your new purchases, JD. But before we do, I want to talk about something very exciting that only actually just happened. Dear listener, we're recording this podcast a little bit early. We're recording on a Friday morning just because I've got to go off to Ashdown. I'm going to Mars Volta on Sunday, and it would mean coming back from London, going back up. I'm excited about seeing Mars Volta, actually. That is going to be great.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing the Music Man Mariposa played live. I will be reporting back, dear listener, on you know, what Omar Rodriguez Lopez uses. Does he use the Mariposa the whole time? Are we going to see the old Ibanez ORL-1? Maybe that weird short scale 15 fret thing that he had Ibanez make him, where he wanted the neck as deep as the body. That maybe that will come out. He used that for Bosnian Rainbows. Who knows? I don't think any of you care as much about Omar Rodriguez Lopez as I do. So probably not interested, but I'm going to report back anyway. So maybe skip next week, dear listener. But the I wanted to talk about is I have been speaking to the team, to Lars and Paul over at Vintage Guitars. I've been speaking to them about their new Pro Shop, because I got a little press release this week announcing that Vintage are now releasing a custom shop within their Pro Shop. So, dear listeners, if you're not in the UK, you might not have heard of Vintage Guitars. They make a lot of it's a terrible name, isn't it? Because it makes it hard to search for, but they make a lot of sort of Gibson-esque, Fender-esque guitars.
at affordable prices, but they're well built, very well built. Wilkinson hardware. They do lots of Wilkinson pickups, but also other like great pickup companies as well. So it's nice stuff, and they do some like road worn relics, and there's loads of cool things in the range. It's been quite substantial. Vintage are actually the company that made Joe Doe guitars, dear listener. You might remember we had Ben Court from Joe Doe on a couple of years ago. They make all those amazingly interesting guitars inspired by films and pop culture, and all the guitars have like an interesting backstory, as if they were owned by a fictitious person in the past, which is very cool. And but basically vintage, they have this pro shop where they do any of their existing models, but they'll do like, they'll make 10 models, and maybe they'll do a pink Strat, and they'll do like it will be pink over, you know, whatever, black paisley or something like that. And they'll do 10 of them and that's it. And they'll be £900 or something incredibly affordable like that. So it was always a fantastic custom shop, and they did really interesting stuff. Like even like a Heavy Relics Paul McCartney style violin bass came out of their pro shop, which was awesome. And it was like £700. And still with like Wilkinson hardware and all these cool bits. And I think the idea is they're having them made in their overseas factory, and then they've got a team of people over here, so they're getting the basic factory models and then they're modding them essentially here, but selling them for incredibly reasonable prices. But what they're doing now is they're opening it up to you, the public, dear listener, so you can now build your own vintage pro shop, which is pretty cool. JD, have you seen the link to this? They have like a So they have like a page where you can choose all your specifications. Basically, it's pretty rudimentary, that you know, the page where you choose your specs, but you can also just have a conversation with them about what you want. The spec choosing bit is just to start the conversation. I think it's not like some of the other custom shops where you're designing on a 3D thing. You're literally checking a box, and then you'll have a discussion with them about specifically what you want, because it's not like Fender where it's like, this is how we do a Heavy Relic. You can specify what you want. You could get some weird text written down the fretboard on these if you want. Like they'll do anything you like, you know. It's a very cool, very thorough, very comprehensive custom shop with some really interesting models. And the point I have taken a while to get to, dear listener, is that we've agreed to let you lot, dear listener, design one. So me and Paul at Vintage, we're talking about a few different ways to do this. And we were like, well, maybe Matt and I could design a guitar each or something like that. And then the listeners could vote. And we suggested, or we could do like a spec a week. So you lot, dear listener, can vote on it. So, you know, we might start with a body shape, and you can contact us any way you like and let us know what body shape you think it should be. And next week we'll choose the neck profile, the pickups, the finish. We won't go into too much hardcore detail, because then it will just, you know, it will go on for months before anything gets built. But we'll choose the basic guitar, and then they're going to build it, and we're going to give it away to one of you, dear listener, which is pretty cool. It's pretty exciting.
And we'll see. I'll say, like, this is really cool, and I mean for those of us who've spent hours and hours of our life building guitars on the builders, like, just to be like, oh, what about this? Like, I feel like this is really cool to be able to sort of group do it. Question I have is, if there's sort of a general process at the end for someone to be like, you know, none of these things go together, we need to make sure that it's fine. Only in the sense that, you know, like when you go to some of those like pizza places where they create your own pizza, like whatever sort of like toppings you want, it's all the same price, those kinds of things. And the amount of times I've added too many things, because I'm at each time I'm like, oh, I like that. Oh, I like that. And at the end, it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have put these things together.
Yeah.
It's not great. So I just wonder if there's sort of a general like caveat of, I'm not going to do anything ridiculous, like too. But also, you and I are not the ones to say one's too ridiculous.
Well, no, like, true. Well, I'm hoping that the way I'm going to make it work is by doing a spec a week. So, like, so I can I'll choose what the spec choices are. It won't, you know, people can suggest outside of it. But so, for example, if we choose a strap body, If we chose a legible body, the next week, you know, you're not going to necessarily have the option to choose, strap pickups or a strap neck or something like that.
Yeah, okay,
then end up with something weird. But I guess that's how we'll do it to keep it. I don't know. I literally got the email from Paul confirming that it was a good idea about an hour before we started podcasting. Yeah. So I'm still.
I mean, yeah. So it's really cool. I just was sort of, you know. I realize we're doing this live on air, but it's just like really, it's like, oh, just want to make sure that because it's going to someone else. Like if it was going to one of us, he'd be like, okay, whatever. But it's like I really want someone to have this special guitar and love it, you know, and be able to actually use it as opposed to being like, well, that's a single Strat pickup in a Les Paul in the bridge position, you know, or whatever. And you'd be like, well. Cool.
yeah. Well, we could do like stuff on the tops, like we could do graphics and things if we wanted to. I mean, I hope the listeners don't choose that. But
I'm holding hands, nude, running into the sea.
You've said it now. Someone's going to suggest it.
away into the sea. You know,
away. So, yes. Yeah. That's better. That's the better of the two options.
Yeah,
but they. If you want to check out their stuff, it's Vintage Guitars R Us, R spelt with the letter R. Love that name. .com is the website, and you can check out their pro shop on there. But they've got some crazy things, like they've got a Day of the Dead fronted Les Paul, which is pretty weird. But they've done really tasteful things. Like I'm looking at a Gun Hill Blue 50s Tele sort of. You know, like a medium relic where it's just the wear on it looks excellent. But they'll do other stuff as well. Like they've done their VSA 500, which is kind of their 335 with a Bigsby. And there's so much stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I also really into some of the Les Paul styles with the Lumitone like pickups and stuff, which just feels so moderny. But I'm into it. You know, there's so many options on here, so that's really
the
cool.
The Illumitone pickups look like Fishman's, but with like in neon green, blue, or red, which is very specific, but kind of cool. I think that sort of thing. Ben Caffrey actually, as soon as I posted about this on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, Ben Caffrey posted saying that he hopes it ends up being like a neon pink Floyd Rose loaded, neon green Floyd Rose loaded, super strat with a single humbucker in the neck. I would go for that if we could get one of these Illumitones in the.
I mean, the thing is, like, we both love EMGs as well. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, an Ibanez Jim is probably the guitar I would buy I mean, I love them. Also, I mean, also, I'm a metal kid anyway, so it's just like, it's got a built-in handle, you know? And like, I know there are newer models and stuff, but it's like, this is one like a late 80s, early 90s vibe, like, Jim, that's what I want.
Okay, fair enough. I'm kind of like, I'm looking through to get inspiration. I really like, they do like a V6, which the V6 is like their strap. They do it in like a heavily distressed graffiti yellow.
Oh yeah, HSS. I saw that. Yeah,
I could get behind that. I could get behind graffiti, something heavy relict in graffiti yellow. Like, dear listener, lean into the 80s. That's what I reckon you should do. Yeah. Let's go something. We can do color over color. Like, there's a surf green strap over sunburst as well.
I feel like color over color, it's got to be there, right? You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, and imagine it, two colors end up in a tie and we just magically make it color over color.
Yeah, that would be cool. They've done some really cool looking, their V120, which is their Les Paul Junior. There's like
they just say distressed red, but the red is really specific. It's not cardinal. It's like postbox red.
Yeah.
Almost maybe Fiesta. It might be Fiesta. It's somewhere between the two over Sunburst, which looks fantastic.
Yeah. I would say, it's interesting. A couple of the photos look different, but I think, Fiesta, but like a bright, rich Fiesta.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the sort of salmon pink Fiesta, which we have now, which is supposed to be the aged version of the color.
Yeah.
There is some
really good stuff on here.
There is. I think I'm probably going to ask them to build a base for me anyway.
of course we are. Speaking of which, have you bought anything recently?
We'll do mine first. I accidentally did. One of the other things I wanted to talk about was I went over to Tim, the guitarist in Polymath's house, earlier this week to build his new pedalboard, which was a great success. But, I had a handful of beers and I was on my way back on the train looking at eBay.
Always happens.
I know. And I was like, this is quite cheap. I'll throw a little bid on that. And you just sort of, you throw a bid and you immediately get outbid. And I was like, well, it's going to go up by £10 and see where that goes. And I just did that a few times until it went, you were the highest bid. I was like, brilliant. I didn't really almost want to win it. I was like, well, I'll get it outbid now. And then I saw that it had like 8 hours left and that would be the middle of the night. So I was like, no one's gonna bid on this, are they? So sure enough, I woke up the next morning, the not quite so proud owner of a Squire Silver Series precision bass in black with a black plate. Do you remember the Silver Series?
Yeah.
No one cares about them. I don't know why. They're still Japanese made, early 90s.
Yeah. I had one of the Silver Series J basses for a while. And I mean, it was 20 years ago, but like it was... Yeah, it was excellent. It was like a really good platform to mod and build a better version of.
So, Yeah. But it's. I just find it weird that it is like this one was like. I checked the serial and it was like 92. This still, I know that's not the heyday of the Japanese building stuff, but they're still an amazing, like it's an amazing factory that it's made out of. It's a Fender approved. Product. Yeah. I guess there are cheaper parts on it, but I got it for like £220, which is not a very affordable price, but they don't go for a lot generally. Like they go for around £300, and that's any of them, the Tellies, the Strats, the P's, the J's, they all seem to go for around that money.
It's such a good value, like
for a Japanese built Fender licensed instrument. I think that's great.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I mean, I don't need another P bass, but now yeah, I guess that's It's another fine. P-Bass. That's it. I've got four. I've got four now. So I don't know what to do with that. Have I got four? I've got 69. I've got a 62 Japanese one that's currently being refinished by Matt Oram of Fidelity Guitars. I'm having that refinished in white. Yeah. And I have got a 50s one, which is in a two-tone sunburst, which is a refinished to a two-tone sunburst. So that's a proper nitro finish. And oh, that's the three. So this is the fourth. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So that's what it's going to be. Another precision bass for my collection. But you, JD, have bought something far more interesting than just a black rosewood necked P bass.
Yeah, so I bought a Berthier Kramer of 450B. So it's a 1978 aluminium necked Kramer with the two big single coil massive.
Oh, they single coil pickups.
Yeah, single. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Although it's dead quiet, so they may be humbuckers. But like, right. I think the old literature says they're single coil. In 78, the old literature says that. So,
right.
I don't really know, but they're, like I said, like they're dead quiet, and it's sort of it's an American black walnut and maple sort of body, like the classic vibes that you get from, you know, from basically bases of that era, you know, kind of thing. And it's very much like Travis Bean style, everything, but it's compared to my other Kramer, it sounds so huge, kind of thing. And it was like, yeah, it was a similar story. It's like, it's been one I've been watching for probably about a year and a half or so. And then the price started coming down
on Reverb.
Yeah, on Reverb. Yeah. So it's been there.
I think I was watching the same one then. I didn't realize that was the one you went for. Yeah. I think I was probably watching the same one because there were a few. Did it start off around 18 or maybe 15?
Yeah, probably somewhere around that. Yeah. And then, but it was, cause maybe it wasn't. There were a couple I'm watching all. Like aluminium necked Kramers, certainly in the UK. So, so it was, and it was one of those things. I had just sort of had like a conversation with some people, and it was a thing where I was talking about how when I turned 30, I meant to buy a Rickenbacker and didn't, because you know, when I used to work there, I was like, okay, well, when I turn 30, I'll buy one, and then I just never got around to it and kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to get one. And so like my birthday's not till December, but I was like, this is going to be it. And I saw it was like the next day the price started coming down on this one. And I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going, because it's, you know, very few gear regrets, but like, I feel like this could have added to it. And, you know, and so I was like, well, I'll just do it. And so I'm just kind of put a message out. And I was like, again, that same sort of thing of like sort of hoping it would be a little out of reach, you know, and then I chatted to the guy a little bit, and then it's here and it's great. So, wow. You know.
Like, wow. So it is, it's the same body shape that you get on the DMZ guitar. Yeah. That's right. Do they call it the DMZ?
The DMZ is, sorry. Yeah, well, yeah, because it's New Jersey. Yeah, so the DMZ is just basically, it's like when it has the DiMarzio pickups.
I see, right.
So it's like the ones that I have are like the Kramer, so they have like they're the big chrome humbucker shape, like soap bar shape with like Kramer stamped on the metal, which just looks dope, to be fair. But it's great. It's like volume tone and a three-way switch between picking, like for the pickups anyway, which is pretty cool to have, you know, volume and tone. But yeah, it's really versatile bass, because the other Kramer I have is just it's the P version of that, which is just volume, tone, and like a bit of a boost, a passive boost. But it's really versatile, and it does really throaty like finger style lines exceptionally well, like just bridge pickup. So it's like, Yeah, and the neck pickup is right at the end of the fretboard. The bridge is basically right at the bridge. So you have this like big chunk of open space, which is just dying to be played with a plectrum, to be fair.
Yeah.
But it's because the pickups are so wide, you get that real sort of like ovation-y or really big boomy kind of sound from the neck pickup. And then the bridge pickup is like sort of classic, just like a ballsy J bridge sound.
Yeah.
And it's, but being able to like just slightly put them out of phase a bit. So like the tone, you know, so that it's not full on, but like back the bridge just a bit, like it's just, it just cuts through, like anything. And it's such a, I really dig it. I'm happy.
They look great. They're so interesting. So, dear listener, if you've seen them, especially on the 2000 series guitar, it has exactly the same neck. It's not like just an aluminium neck like you might get today that you can buy to retrofit on a guitar. The Kramer necks are aluminium in places, and then... And then it has, they have two runs of wood that run, that sit in the aluminium, I guess to give you the stability and tonality of aluminium, but the feel of wood, I don't know.
So it's basically, so the neck design is, it's like a T shape basically that runs. So it's flat for the under the fretboard, and then it's like a T shape that runs in the back. The reason they did that is, and the fretboard's like ebonol. So it's it's an ebonol fretboard, and so the reason,
which is the reconstituted ebony material,
The like epoxy plasticized, you know, it's basically like a waterfall table, but for your bass or a guitar. But it's the reason they did that was because these were a reaction to the Travis Bean guitars, and so it was initially to reduce weight. And to give a bit more of the feel of wood. So you have, so it's basically like there's two wood like filler strips in essence that are sort of conical. Like if you look, they look like half dowel rods basically. Like if you were to cut them, kind of picture it. But then it's basically, so you get the feel. So under your thumb, it still feels like you're mostly on like the wood parts. So it still feels sort of that, and it's like glossed finished wood, like you would, like if you wanted, like have that, and then you get the zinginess and stability and like heft of the aluminium where it's what's there. But you know, it really is to sort of, it's for the feel, and
I see,
you know, it looks cool too, but it's also
it's
a weight thing,
it's a weight thing. I had no idea. The thing that strikes me about that is, over time, if the wood shrinks or the opposite of shrinks, then is it going to end up out of line with the T line of aluminium on the back?
Yeah, it does. So, like, there's some I've played over the years where there's like a noticeable gap. And like on mine, you can sort of tell like it's two pieces of wood stuck into a thing. It's not, you know, it's not like a seamless feel, it's not detrimental or anything. And it's sort of, I mean, both of my basses are 40 some, you know, they're both late 70s, I think. One's 78, one, I can't remember if it's like 79 or if it might be an 81 or something like that.
Right.
And so they're, you know, stuff changes that, you know, like it's not like they were brand new, but yeah, there, I think there is some variance in that. So that's something to check out if you're looking at them. Now that I think I'm at least done for a while, I'm happy for everyone to go, to go look and see, but I have, you know, I have the two biggies. So yeah.
Right. That I feel like that time period, that like late 70s was, there were so many guitars that came out like this, and they all look like that coffee tables. They're super heavy. They'll have loads of features, and they'll be very premium. But, you know, I think of like that Kramer stuff. It reminds me of the Ibanez Musician line, which they did great basses, but great guitars as well.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I was like, those are some. I'm sorry. those are some of my favorites. And what I would think about this is last time I was on, we talked about like rare, you know, like what's still undervalued in the market kind of finds. Yeah. And I always find those roadsters and musicians and stuff from like the 70s and like they're always so good. And I remember, you know, like in the early noughties and stuff, like friends had them and it was just kind of like, oh, what's that cheap Ibanez that you had? And you're like, this is an amazing guitar. Like what? Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly. They're just such, I mean, this look hasn't come back around yet. I don't think it's in vogue at the moment. I hope it does come back around because I think they're very cool. I'm a big fan of the Ibanez Musician series, especially for this, dear listener, on specs. I'll talk about the guitars. They made their own pickups at this time, so they're their own custom shape. And the pickups have like a circumference to them, so they sit perfectly in line with your strings, where your guitar perfectly set up. You look at like the 3-part bridge and the way they've done the saddles and how they're adjustable. It's the sort of thing that you would spend hundreds of pounds on a retrofitting bridge that does this sort of thing. They just throw it on there, and then you look at the switching options. They'd make them active. They'd give you 3 bands of EQ plus a master tone and volume because you can run it passive as well. And then like, I actually don't know. I'm looking at an Ibanez Musician MC500 series on eBay somewhere in the States. And it said 1979 one. Oh, they don't give any information on it. There are, tell me if you know what these are, dear listener. There are 3 little buttons on, they might be tiny little toggles, actually. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, they're little toggles, yeah.
Are they little toggles? But, oh, yes, they are. Sorry, I can see from the side. They're not actually little at all. It was just the angle of the other photo I was looking at. One's red. It might just be that it's retrofitted, and the other two are just a black metal. But
I think they had a red one. I think they all had the red switch, and I think the red was active passive or something, or like turn on, but I think it was more about a boost. It's the other thing is like, it's one of those eras where nothing was set in stone. Like everyone was doing new stuff.
Yeah.
And we hadn't got to a place where everyone's like, oh, well, you don't do that. This is what most people want you know, and it feels like, you know, by, you know, whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, like there's so much like design by committee or design by like boardroom stuff happening where it's like, well, that doesn't actually sell. No one actually wants that. Or if they do, we'll aftermarket or we'll make it a, you know, like a signature model. And it's one of the things I love about this era of guitars is that everything was new. Cause I think this is correct, but the MC500 especially, I think was more of a reaction to a lot of the Alembic guitars and the Alembic basses that have been coming out. And because this is, and then thinking about some of the BC Rich, like their top end that they had there, where it was very much akin to like what you would get with Alembics with all sorts of stuff in there, you know. And it's things like the Grateful Dead, like musically is not really, I've never been into them musically, but gear wise, they are probably the band that propelled guitar, I think also right time, but propelled like innovation as far as like instruments go for like electric instruments go, like more than any other band for sure.
Yeah, you are probably right there. I agree. I feel the same there. Music is uninteresting to me. It's not for me, but not that it's not great, dear listener, but not for me, but they absolutely did drive innovation. It was a great time. Like another company that springs to mind making great stuff, slightly different, Yamaha and the SG. The SG. Oh, yeah. What a fantastic Les Paul alternative at that point in time. I mean, I've seen a few came through GAC when we were working there, and I've owned a couple, and they were always the heaviest guitars in the world. And I think when I was younger, I was like, oh no, this is heavy, that's a bad thing, whereas now I'd be like, yeah, that's awesome, I want a guitar with some heft to it. But they go for some serious money now. You know, you can't get one for, I guess there were two, I'm looking at 2,000, 2,500, that sort of thing.
But I mean you think about it and it's like that is a lot, especially for what you could get them for 7 years ago, let's say.
Sure, yeah.
But But I mean, they're incredible instruments for that. That, you know, it's like that if you were to buy that spec new, I think you'd be double that maybe in some places, depending on who and what. And, you know, I've always had an issue with how much Olympics cost, but even when I didn't have to pay full price for them, but it's still, you look at the prices for their stuff and nothing compares. And like their old stuff is cheaper than you can buy new now and everything. Right. But the other brand I keep thinking about too is Kawai. Like, I feel like another Japanese brand, but I feel like they did other versions of this in like the late 70s, early 80s, like their guitars that were all, you know, the same sort of vibe of like neck through, active, lots of options. Like, bass wise, they have like the F2B or FIIB, technically is how it's written, it was sort of designed as like an Olympic killer. And you see,
you know, it's very cool.
Oh, that's another one of my, like, I wish I owned one of these. Because I mean, they're fantastic. And you see loads of you know, footage of bands, like the top tier bands from like that era playing these guitars, like the Ibanez Musician, you see the Kawai F2B, you see you know, a lot of like Earth, Wind and Fire style videos and bands playing stuff like that. And it's just, I mean, not wanting to sound all old man yells at cloud about like looking lusting after gear that, you know, is older than us, but still, like, I mean, to be fair, that's what a lot of us do anyway. But it's thing is that they should all be held up as legendary instruments, I think, in a way that they sort of aren't. You know, it's just like these things exist, they're great, but no one cares now.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's so many old stuff that was terrible that we think about, like that custom bass I used to have. Do you remember this one? That, like, it was like the custom, what is the model number? It was like a late 60s semi-hollow, like Rickenbacker 360 shape on a bass, was short scale. What is it? It was a custom K200. It was a custom K200 is the bass.
Right.
So it was two big, like, I don't even know. I remember it's when I was doing work on and I was trying to make it like a cross between loads of stuff. And then the thing that I found that the string spacing wasn't a standard string spacing, so nothing fit. So when I tried to like retrofit a bridge, the only way I could do it was to put on like a violin bass bridge and like send it down, because those, you have the little pieces of fret wire that you can like move to the right place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like all these stuff. And so I remember I have the one of the pickups from it, and I bought a TV Jones, was it the Thunder bass pickup, I think.
Right.
Just sort of put in it to get a bit more modern stuff. And then before I moved to the UK, I thought those had succumbed to my rush to get everything out, because it was, you know, pandemic vibes, right? So it was like, couldn't really do anything. So it was, and I thought I must have accidentally tossed them away. But I was going through a box of stuff I had and found both those pickups the other day. And so like, so now I'm trying to figure out what I do. And, you know, it might be, you know, as we talked about, like buying a new bass is probably to put them in is probably the way to go. But I did think maybe
that's such a great excuse. Like,
I found a pickup, must have a new bass. But I did think that maybe I'll try to put the TV Jones in in the Bronco, just to give it a whirl and see how that goes.
Yeah,
it's like the most un-Bronco pickup, a big massive TV Jones. But
I'm into it. You should do that. You should do it. Now, dear listener, that is the question duck, reminding me to remind you that after JD and I finished on this episode, we're heading over to the Guitar Nerds Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where each week we record an extra episode where we talk about topics raised on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. And we've got a few things to kind of talk around this week. Daniel Walker, he's picked up an HSS Shellpink Squire Stratocaster. I just kind of wanted to talk, well, I didn't even know this was something that you could get, but it looks fantastic. Maybe we'll talk a bit around those models. Sam Brooksby was asking for recommendations on his first foray into reverb pedals for noodling at home, something not too complicated. And then, I don't know, we've got some other things. Renard, I think that's how you say your name, builds guitars, and he last year had one of these, his Radical Winged Headstock instrument was released to great fanfare, and Guitar World have just put out an article on his new model. Maybe we'll talk about that. We've got some other things. Dewey is looking at buying a chorus pedal. Maybe we'll extend our chorus chat, and we've got some other things there as well. But do join us, dear listener, on the Patreon after we finish this episode. Before we go there, however, I was choosing what to talk about next. Okay, so before we, I want to do the thing that I've been messing around with this week. Let's talk about that.
It is. I just want to get it.
I got sent this Afterlife fuzz.
Oh yeah, great.
From VVCO pedals, which is absolutely fantastic. So, dear listener, if you've not seen this, I can't believe the insane value you're getting for the Afterlife pedal. I think this is like the last run of Afterlife pedals that they're doing, which is why they are so incredibly affordable. On the vvcopedals.com website, dear listener, I need to tell you about this pedal first of all. It is a coffin-shaped distortion stroke fuzz. A massive, oversized, coffin-shaped fuzz. There are so many features that I will talk about in a minute. First of all, it is currently £80 on their shop, down from £239. Tax included, dear listener. What more could you possibly want? It is very cool. It is huge. It's not very pedalboard friendly, but who cares? It sounds fantastic. The thing is, when you make a pedal in a chassis like this, it obviously, I'm concerned, is this going to be a gimmick? Is it going to sound... Is it going to sound decent? Not decent. Like, is it going to blow me away, or is it just going to be an average pedal in a box? But it's actually fantastic. Like, other features that are really cool about it is that the LED is constantly changing colors. The coffin has these almost holes around the side where the light resonates through those as well. So it's a whole light show on your pedal board anyway, just straight off the bat. Two controls. The only controls are a volume and then four separate voicings, which are a whirlwind, some thunder, a sun, and a star. And they're all just different voicings. So it's a vintage distortion is the whirlwind. The thunder is modern distortion. The sun is modern fuzz. And the star is vintage fuzz.
I mean, to be fair, that's four separate pedals, you know, four separate distortions you're getting, because it's I think I remember looking, it's like, it's basically like a DS1 Rat, a Maestro fuzz, and whatever the modern fuzz is, but like, it's like,
I think the modern fuzz might be something that's, it's based on their own fuzz, because they do a separate pedal called the Pickle fuzz.
I
think the modern one is that, but the rest of those were and you're absolutely right, it is four different analog effect circuits inside. Analog effect circuits. They're not just doing this cheaply with some, you know, some digital presets or slightly changing an EQ and saying, oh, this one sounds more like this, so we'll call it this. It is literally four different analog effect circuits inside.
I think it's good value for what, like, at its original price, really, but for £80, or, you know, like that's sub $100, you know, like that's actually, it's ridiculous. And Yeah, and it's cool.
It's a completely custom chassis. Like, yeah. you know, nothing's been, and everything's great. It doesn't look like, it looks so professional. Like, I love on the back, it's got like a, on the back, it has information about the pedal, which is great. And it says, chaos ensuing darkness focused on a moment in time. Tone is the afterlife. It's one of the things that it says.
It's the other thing I was thinking about is it's like, It would be ridiculous of us and hypocritical, but, you know, it's also us. If we were to be like, well, I don't like this pedal that is clearly not designed by a bunch of boardroom suits, you know? It's like, yeah. like, people would be like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put it in a coffin. And, you know, we're not just going to cover it with, like, a bunch of skulls and, like, you know, make this only suitable for goths. You know, yeah. like it's just a cool coffin style case. And really, the thing that really gets me is the holes on the side, like the lights where you would have like handles on like a coffin, like the lights turn. It's such a cool thing, and it's just like it's a good vibe. It's the kind of stuff where like if you only wanted to take one pedal for places, you get four distortions that you don't have to really fiddle with between, like just being able to select it. That's really good. I'm super into it. Like, yeah. I think it's an absolute smash. So
I really liked it. I recorded a little thing with it. I'll play a little sample, dear listener, so you can hear it. So at first, I recorded something with it where I was just like playing the same riff on all the four different presets. But honestly, that you know, even though they are different, certainly the Maestro one stands out as being very different. There's a lot of similarities. So. It would almost, you know, I didn't feel it was showing off the pedal by me just playing the same riff through each one. So instead, I built a little track where I used the Maestro because it's, of course, very thin, nasally fuzz. I've used that as like some rhythm stuff underneath. And then I've used the modern distortion and the modern fuzz for two like parallel side-by-side lead guitars. The first guitar tone that you'll hear come in is the modern distortion. Fuzz, the modern fuzz, which is based on their first pedal. I really liked that. I thought it sounded the best. It did that lovely, wonderful, super squishy, gated fuzz, but without making it unusable. I didn't feel like it was... sometimes they can be too small. It makes them too square wave, too be in a box. This one was still fat and thick, and it had lovely artifacts and harmonics and things like that. It was just... great. But anyway, here's the afterlife. I also shoved a load of organ on it because it's shaped like a coffin and it was appropriate. There you go. The Afterlife fuzz stroke distortion. Four different analog pedals in one in a coffin case. On the surface level, it seems gimmicky, but it's not. It's actually just a great pedal, and now it's £80 or $100.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I really like all those tones, and I think it's the thing that I always think about too. Like when you're talking about like the not just running the same riff through the different presets, like the different circuits to sort of say, oh, this is how each one sounds. Cause it's like, you would imagine that you would play differently if it's a different style sound. And so I think that's,
Yeah,
it's much better. Yeah,
it was exactly that. I think when I wrote the original one, which obviously I'm not playing for anyone, dear listener. When I wrote the original one, I was doing like I think I really liked the one I used the main bit for at the start, the modern fuzz the most. So I wrote the riff using that, and then I re-recorded it with the other things. But certainly with like vintage fuzz, which has loads of low end, a lack of mids and a lack of high end, it's a bit more woofy. The precision of the riff didn't work so well on it. And I played the Maestro one last. And of course, Maestro is a really trebly thin sounding fuzz. And it just made that fiddle sound, that effect sound weak, because I was playing a riff that I'd written with a heavily gated fuzz. Whereas, you know, you play some big chords with a Maestro fuzz and it's perfect. It's so brash and nasty and gnarly. That's what the Maestro needs. So yeah, it's just different applications for each one of the presets, but just a brilliant pedal, I think yeah. It was great.
Well into it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that is, we are more or less coming up to time, JD. We are going to head over, dear listener, to Patreon, talk about some other questions. Maybe I'll talk about the stuff I was posting on Facebook as well, the Zilla cabs that I put up there, and how the head that I posted already sold.
It's also like such a laugh that we've both now talked about, like, things we found that we didn't know we had.
That's how you know you've got a problem.
Yeah.
But dear listener, you can get in touch with us to ask a question, or for any reason at all, if there's a company you think we should be checking out or anything like that. Email us info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram, ask us questions in the Facebook group. If you're a Patreon supporter, then contact us through there. We're heading over to Patreon to talk about all the questions. Join us. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up and support our little community, which you can do, dear listener, for as little as $1 a month. Thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Well, that's it for another week of the Guitar Nerds podcast, which only leaves me to say thank you eternally and very, very muchly to all of our top-tier Patreon backers. Thank you very much to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hisiao Kaduaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and the wonderful Moog Gravit.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.